And thank you for watching Rental Property News. I'm Heather Anderson, and let's get started on our top story. This is from John Deere.
End of the hour.
Yep.
So nice to finally meet you.
Yep, come to the state of Indiana.
I already see some deer over there.
We're all John Deere around here. But everything's down the shop, so.
Wow.
I own that one, that one, that one.
You gotta be the luckiest kid in Indiana.
You can choose. Which one do you want to start on?
Well, which one's your favorite? That might be a dumb question. I think you know everything about all of them.
So this is a 1970 John Deere 112.
And you're the one that bought it, right? Back
yep.
then?
Yep, $35 for the tractor.
Oh my gosh.
I call this tractor the best $35 I ever spent. Tires ain't cheap anymore. Like, nothing's cheap mm-hmm. anymore. Not even water's free, which is... You may as well go back and get it in the back creek. I like a clean property, mm-hmm. and I like seeing it clean, and I like a mowed yard. So that's kind of, I like having a mowed yard, weed whacked, nice landscaping, and a nice tractor. And with this tractor, you gotta sometimes, just to get the lights to go, you sometimes have to bang the front light, light cover to get it to go.
You know, percussive maintenance, I think that's something that I can do.
So they say they don't make them like that anymore. Can you relate with that young man? Can you relate with that young man? Can you feel what he is saying? I know I can, and you're right. They don't make them like they used to. And that's true in John Deere tractors, then that's true in real estate. Let's take a look at the stress test they use on bricks. From today and from yesteryear.
Some of the building materials from different time periods and see how they stack up. A brick from modern times, a brick from the 1950s, and a brick from 1890. Let's see what ones hold up to the pressure. Looks like 607 for the modern day. Oh, whopping 1,049 for the 1950 brick. And no surprise to me, the brick from the 1890s with 1,175 wins. And now let's take a look at concrete and how much pressure it can hold. From the modern day concrete of 6,321. And we have concrete of the old world. Not even close, over 18 tons. We are truly going forwards and reverse. I think the evidence speaks for itself. Question everything, friends.
And thank you, Question Everything on Facebook, for this video. It helps remind us that they don't make them like they used to. And does that mean you go out and you buy an old rental property because the concrete and the bricks have more pressure allotment? Well, you see, like everything in life, there's pros and cons. It doesn't mean one thing or another. What this is information. This is a tool, and this allows you to have information. So you know that old materials were better made in these two categories. Well, what does that even mean, better made? Well, it means they can withstand stronger pressure, which leads you to believe they can probably withstand stronger elements. But just a tool in the old tool belt, my friend. So Hustlers in the Hood is saying there's $1 million hiding behind your family's egos. Let's check it out. Let's see what her message is today.
Together. Did you know that there's $1 million in every single person's family? Right now, you probably have 4 family members who are literally paying about mortgage or rent $1,500, this is New York, so to $2,500. I live in $1 million home. Do you know if y'all just sacrifice just 4 years together, y'all put a deposit and just put paid the mortgage together and put the rest of the money that y'all was paying regardless to the side, then you guys could refinance the property and then go buy something else. Do you see what I'm saying? But it's like we have to work in unity and togetherness. When I first bought my home, we have a rule in the family. No one is allowed to buy something that all of us can't afford individually. I was living in an apartment that my sister could afford until we all could afford $1 million property. I couldn't drive around in a Maserati until my entire family could afford one. And so that's important. Like, we have to get together.
What an interesting concept. What do you think about that? Is that possible? Is it possible to live together as a family, all contributing toward the rent? I've heard about this in Latin culture, where they do a house share type of thing. It actually has a name. It's not coming to memory at the moment, but they contribute to the property, the mortgage, until the mortgage is paid off, and then everyone helps that second person pay the mortgage off. To any of my Latin friends out there, if you know the name of that, please add it in the comments below and help explain it a little better than I know I'm giving it recognition for and understanding of right now. But I think her concept is wonderful, because the key to getting ahead is getting started. And in order to become a first generation millionaire, you're going to have to be creative in most cases, because if you're a normal person like me, like her, and maybe like you, we do have to think outside of the box, and this is one way of doing that. And if you do that, maybe you can do something like this one day.
Welcome!
She bought a new home for her entire family.
This girl told me she going on a trip.
Oh my God, I believe your life.
You made me cry, Libby.
There's Grandpa.
Did you know this?
What a blessing. Thank you, Happiest. Says she broke the generational curse. Praise God. Amen. That is beautiful. Who wouldn't want to give that beautiful gift to their family and bless them for the sacrifices they made in raising you, no matter how good or bad your childhood might have been? You see, real estate is powerful, and it changes lives, just like in this story right there. Let's check out this gentleman's plan. We've seen a couple of others. Let's see his. You can do 30 properties in 5 years. Comment BRRR to gain access to the mini course. Remember, in our previous episode of Rental Property News, we've talked about BRRR. It stands for Buy, Rehab, Refinance, Rent, and Repeat. You're basically doing a flip with a loan, okay? Basically doing a flip with a loan. I take that back. You're basically doing a flip and adding a loan to it and turning it into a rental property. What am I thinking? And in that regard, you're not selling it, okay? So it's kind of like you're flipping it, but you're not selling it. That's what I meant to say. So you're paying cash, you're doing the rehab, or you could do hard money. And then you're increasing the value to increase the appraisal amount to do the refinance, and then rent it out, and then repeat the process. That's the concept anyway. Let's see what this gentleman has to say. This is under Nate Barger. Okay. From bankrupt to 300 million real estate portfolio, 100 plus real estate millionaires created. Congratulations, Nate. Amen. That's wonderful. Let's see this guy's testimony.
Properties in 5 years. Two the first year, four the next year, then six, then eight, then 10. After 5 years, you can retire the rest of your life. Then properties will generate you $12,000 to $15,000 a month in passive income. You'll also have another $20,000 a month in appreciation, and you'll have principal reduction. In other words, every time you make a payment, the amount that you owe goes down. That's how you get wealthy. I was looking at one of my sheets from the hotel the other day, just one hotel. Our mortgage payment's $81,000 a month. Guess how much of that is interest?
I don't know, man, probably like 50.
$56,000, meaning every time I make a payment, net worth grows $25,000. Every time you make a payment. You know how many people are out here struggling that went to Harvard, they went to all these Ivy League schools, and they're looking for the schools to save them? It ain't gonna happen, man. Understand how to invest, understand how to be your own entrepreneur. That way nobody has to come and save you.
Okay, my friends, so 30 properties in 5 years, that's about six properties every year, that's about one property every 2 months you're buying, or every 60 days. That's a pretty significant pace. And maybe he does two at a time or three at a time, and it's not linear like that. But is that your pathway, friend? Definitely not a wrong pathway. Is that your pathway? Are you a Burr person? Are you interested enough to come over to Nate Barker's Facebook page and type in Burr to get more information? Maybe you are, maybe you're not. But it's something to consider. It is a pathway, and it does work for people. Now, let's look at Julian Gordon. My purpose is to free 300 plus people like Harriet Tubman through entrepreneurship and real estate investing. Okay. He says, don't buy a single family home. Okay, wow. Well, what's the truth? This other guy says, do Burr. This other girl says, live in a house with your family until you guys can afford it. This other girl bought her family a house. What does this gentleman say? He's saying, don't buy a single family home. Do this instead. Let's check it out and see his message.
Do not buy a single family home. It is a trap in the American dream, also known as the American nightmare. What the real estate industry won't tell you is that even if this home is $300,000, the true price of this home is actually $590,000. Once you get to a 5.5% interest rate, you're gonna pay for this home twice. You're gonna buy one for yourself and one for your lender. So you see the trickery here? What they don't tell you about is the private mortgage insurance, right? They also don't tell you about the homeowner's insurance, the property taxes, maintenance. So this is why we don't buy single family homes first. We build our multifamily real estate portfolio where our real estate is actually paying us, and then we use the cash flow and the appreciation from those properties to then buy our single family home. Here's a secret. If you want something in life, help other people get it first, and you will then get it. I provide quality, affordable housing for other people. And as a result of doing that, I get to be in a beautiful single family home. If you want to learn this game, go to rentfree.com. I'll show you how to finance, find, and finalize multifamily real estate deals and win even in the midst of a recession. All right? Much love, y'all. Peace.
Okay, Mr. Jillian, let's actually go to rentfree.com and check it out. So rentfree.com takes you to the multifamily movement, a family for your financial freedom, how to eliminate your rent or mortgage payment and build wealth with multifamily real estate. Learn how exactly I did it. Built a portfolio of 10 multifamily homes with 30 apartments, generating $35,900 per month in just 6 years. So I guess it's 10 multifamilies that have a total of 30 apartments. Okay. And then $35,000 a month. I assume that's net, but maybe it's gross. I don't know. Looks like he has some training available. August 19th, okay. And he has a video you can check out.
What's up, y'all? It's Julian Gordon from the Multifamily Movement, and I'm actually here in Brooklyn, New York, in front of my first property right here, three-family home that I bought in Brooklyn, New York, that literally changed the financial trajectory of my life and was really the beginning of creating wealth. I know a lot of people out there have read Rich.
It's a good pathway for you. Check it out. Check out rentfree.com and sign up. You know, I'm just curious why maybe people don't do this because they don't know about it. Maybe it's a pathway that doesn't make you feel comfortable because of your risk tolerance and your feeling. It is an honor to see someone use the system, though, and get ahead in life like Julian has or says he has. So not every pathway is going to work for you, friend. The key to getting ahead is getting started. And the key is to define what your pathway is. There are a lot of them, as you can see. And let's talk about yet another one. This comes from stackedhomes.com. And this is called Homeowner Story. However, as I've read it prior to recording our rental property news episode, I noticed, I don't know if this is a real story or a marketing tool. You decide. The title says, ex-police officer reveals the simple investment strategy that helped him secure 40 property deals, and it has a cartoon of him. T.S., it doesn't have a name, T.S. didn't take the usual route into investing. A former officer in both London's Metropolitan Police Service and the Royal Hong Kong Police. His disciplined approach to wealth came from years in public service and hard lessons learned through trial and error. Today, he has more than 40 fractional real estate deals under his belt. So that's a little different than maybe the words property deals. He owns 40 fractional pieces of real estate, which is this tokenized real estate pathway that we're seeing today. Owning a piece of real estate doesn't necessarily have to be on the blockchain, which is usually what tokenized is synonymous with, but it could be syndicated, which means you own a part of what is typically only able to own a whole in. Most of them through this company called Real Vantage, a platform he credits for helping him stay invested in property without the usual headaches of ownership. But it took missteps in stocks, losses in Forex, whatever that is, and property market crashes to shape who he is today. So it says he bought something in 1997, and then the Asian financial crisis hit. He had to sell it for significant loss. And that really hurt his, you know, perspective. However, he still believed in real estate investing, but I guess he wanted a new twist. So he said, what drew him to the fractional real estate investing? When I discovered Real Vantage, the model made perfect sense to me. It let me stay inside real estate, but without the burden of managing property myself. No tenant issues, no agents, no repairs, no tax paperwork. With smaller capital outlays, I could invest across more deals, sectors, and countries. That efficiency appealed to me, especially after years of managing physical property myself. Now that you've done over 40 fractional deals, what keeps you coming back? It's simple. The model works. The platform's easy to use. The teams are experienced. The research is strong. I don't need to check the news every day because I trust the due diligence. Returns have been steady, around 8 to 9% per year, and there's never been a default in any of my investments. So, let's take a look at what this Real Vantage company is. And it's okay. So, looks like they've bought, or 133 deals have been funded. 41 deals have been realized. I don't know what that means. And they also spell realized with an S, which tells me it's probably not American. Not good or bad, just something to be aware of. 20.7% average net IRR for realized equity deals with an asterisk at the bottom, which we'll look at. 7.6% average net return PA for realized income deals. Realized rates of return. The year in equity deals, average net IRR, internal rate of return is what that stands for. 16.9, 38.1, 11, and nil, zero. Okay, income deals, average net return P dot A squared, 9.1, 7.1, 6.8, 7.1 as of July 1st, 2025. Average net IRR is calculated on the weighted average internal rate of return of fully realized equity deals weighted by the US dollar, equivalent investment amount of each deal, computed net of taxes and fees. I don't know what that means. Average net return P dot A is calculated as the average annualized return for fully realized income deals, net of taxes and fees. Okay, still don't know what that means. Do you know what that means? If you don't know what that means, you need to learn what that means. Maybe that's a question you would ask them before you invest, and you would ask. You know, let's see the team here. Keith Ong, Mao Ching Fu, Mark Ho Lin Wong, Victoria Ao, Samuel Lowe, Andy Kunara. Okay, Singapore, Melbourne, Singapore. These are the universities they went to, University of Pennsylvania, Chicago. Okay, well, the question is, where are they investing? That might be good to know too. looks like you create an account, browse investment opportunities, invest, and then Real Advantage says it does the rest and you just get the money. Looks like their office is in Singapore. Okay, so that explains more, doesn't it, as we go on our rabbit trail due diligence. Our story, okay, conceived from our co-founder's beliefs that a revolution in direct real estate investment is long due. After building successful careers in institutional real estate, investment industry, and technology firms, their vision at Real Vantage is to bring their collective skill sets, experience, and knowledge to unlock a world of institutional real estate investing for everyone. So to me, they're doing a syndication, which means you are the investor and you don't have obviously managerial rights and voting rights, but you're the investor and it's kind of like buying a stock. You give them money and they hopefully give you a return. So the question is this where you want your money to go? Is this your pathway? And by the way, IRR, internal rate of return, how does it calculate? Let's take a look at this video and see if we can have a little more clarity on that.
In this video, I'll be showing you how to calculate the internal rate of return, or IRR, in Excel. So here we're given a cash flow table, and to calculate the IRR, we first press equals, type down IRR like this. We input all the cash flow values, then press semicolon or comma, depending on if you're using a Mac or Windows, and we input a guess. A guess here is just how much you think the internal rate of return is. So for example, if I think it's around 20%, then Excel will try to iterate or find the internal rate of return within that range of numbers. So we close the bracket and we press enter. And we find that the internal rate of return is 20%, which if we take some more decimal places, we find out that it is actually 19.78%. Now, it's not necessary to input a guess, so you can just do IRR, drag all the cash flow values, close the bracket like this, and Excel will still calculate it for you. Now, in example two, we're given a cash flow table as well, but the cash flows are still missing. If you're given income expenses like this, or income expenses, taxes, and so on, you always have to calculate for the cash flow first. So do this by just income subtracted minus expenses. So zero minus this, then drag all this down like this. Okay, now we have the cash flows, and all we need to do is just calculate the IRR simply like this by typing IRR and dragging all the cash flow values, closing the bracket, and we get that the IRR is 19%, or more specifically, 18.72%. So that's it for this video. Thank you.
All right, did that make sense to you? Is that clear now? Well, if it's not clear to you, don't worry about it. It's not clear to me either. I've never used IRR to calculate any calculation on any one of my rentals or my client's rentals ever. But I'm not saying you shouldn't. I would probably have done a better job if I did, probably. These kind of things help you put your rental property business in a process, financial-driven approach. It removes feelings. It gets you more in structure. You're just looking at numbers all day. This is absolutely what professionals use. Okay, but I'm only telling you my story because I want you to know it's not the only way, it's one way. So if this feels overwhelming and this scares you, and I mean, hopefully not a simple, you know, spreadsheet would scare you, but I understand it's a lot of information and I know how it feels to feel like you have to know everything before you can get started. And that is absolutely not true. The key for most normal people like you and me to get ahead in life is you have to just start. You have to start. You have to begin. And if you get caught up in analysis paralysis and you don't know IRR and you never get started, then that is completely missing the point. The key to getting ahead is getting started. And that's all there is to it. You figure this stuff out as you go. You play the long game and you never give up and you always win. And how do I know this? Well, I read books, okay? I didn't actually read any book before I started investing, but after I started investing, I started reading a lot of books. And MSN.com talks about self-taught real estate investors, that would be me, say three books help them go from zero rental units to more than 100, which I would not fit that category. I don't have anywhere near 100. I mean, I have less than 10. So I would not say that would be me. But But let's take a look at these books. Okay, let's take a look at these books here. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, still in the number one position. That is just a good general finance book. And his book is so valuable to so many people and resonates with so many people because it's relatable. Okay, his dad was a normal dad. Most of us have normal dads, and his friend had a really rich dad. And the normal dad was basically saying everything opposite of the rich dad. The rich dad was saying use debt to get ahead. His dad, the teacher dad, was saying don't use debt. It's an enemy. Well, okay, you have to know how to use debt. It can be an enemy. It's like a gun. A gun in and of itself doesn't cause damage. It's who's using the gun and how they're using it and the choices they make holding and being behind the gun. That's the same thing with finance and debt and money. But it's very relatable because we all understand. Another book is called How to Use Limited Liability Companies and Limited Partnerships. So I didn't read by Garrett Sutton. I didn't read this particular book, but I read a similar book about tax strategy and business entity incorporation and setup. And that book changed my life. I read that in 2013, I believe. And I was absolutely just, my eyes were opened wide after that book. And I completely changed how I thought about business after that book because I started learning about tax strategy. In this book, I can't remember if I bought it or I was gifted it, but I tried to read this book many years and it just never worked out. I remember actually this book was in the back little crevice of my SUV trunk for years, just kind of like getting faded by the sun. I don't know why it stayed there, but it did. I've heard it's a great book. I've really have. And I've heard Gary Keller, who started the huge brokerage firm called Keller Williams and the largest brokerage firm in America. Very successful guy, actually started it right out of Austin, Texas. And, you know, and again, maybe, but I've heard that book's great and a lot of people read it. So definitely consider it. But I hope there's a fourth book on MSN's self-taught real estate investors say four books helped them to go from zero rentals to only four would be my tagline. And that would be this book, What Type of Rental Property Investor Am I? I know it says real estate, but we're going to change that. That's just the mock-up before we publish. What Type of Rental Property Investor Am I? And that, my friends, is my book. Okay. I took 100 case studies. I boiled them down to the top 20 case studies. I put them in four categories and called them certain animals so you could easily remember what these animal personality types are. And I told their true stories, and we have a wolf, a fox, a goldfish, and an elephant. And it helps you pick your pathway. It helps you qualify yourself to see if you're willing and able. And if you are willing and able, it helps you pick your pathway so you can get started, because the key to getting started is getting started. So check back on our website, rentalpropertyu.com, to learn about the book. Or if you don't want to read the book, consider liking or subscribing to our YouTube channel. If you like what we're doing here, Rental Property News, you can see some other segments down here. And will you be number 65? Will you be number 65 of our subscribers? We'd be so honored and so grateful. So if the key to getting ahead is getting started, then why would I start in a buyer's market? Are we in a buyer's market? That's what the word on the street seems to be. Let's see what that actually means. So the U.S. housing market is increasingly shifting toward a buyer's market, is what AI Overview says. While it's not a textbook buyer's market nationwide yet, conditions are becoming more favorable for buyers due to increased inventory, slower sales, and more price reductions. The market is moving away from a strong seller's market in recent years. So let me ask you, my little rental property investor ears, when would it be the right time for you to buy? Would it be the right time for investors to buy in seller's market or buyer's market? Well, the answer, my friend, is a buyer's market. That's where you're going to get the best opportunity. There's too much competition in a seller's market. It's too hard to win in a seller's market. Deals are being made now. Now is the time for first-time home buyers, VA buyers, rental property investors and move-up buyers. Those four buying categories are who need to move. And that is just the truth. And are we in a buyer's market officially according to economists? Because you see economists discern a buyer's market when we get to 6 months or more of a housing inventory. It's generally considered to be a buyer's market. And how many months of inventory do we have right now? We have about 4.7 months of inventory. Okay. About 4.7 months. So we're still not quite an official buyer's market. We just think we are because we're so spoiled to have properties move so quickly. But you know, even in buyer's markets, houses sell. Okay. We were in a buyer's market. Absolutely. In 2009, there were 4.6 million homes that were sold in the United States in 2009. That was in the Great Recession. In the Great Recession, at the pit of the Great Recession, this was the pit. This was the pit. This was still 5.299 houses were sold. I don't know how they were more sold in 2009, but according to this, it is. I don't know if that's true. Again, remember, AI overview of the internet, ChatGPT is just a tool. This is a quick overview glance of what this data is. If I really, 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 really want to know the truth, I would dig deeper and look at my own reports from NAR and census and government sources. But it's saying 2011, you see there were 4.562 homes sold. And then in 2012, there was 4.65, which was a 9.2 increase from 2011. So homes were still selling in buyer's markets. And actually, Dave Ramsey sold his beautiful, lavish Tennessee estate in 2021, which was a seller's market, the opposite, okay? But it's back on the market again, you see. Back on the market again, okay? He sold it for $10 million in 2021. Now it's being sold for $15 million in 2025. Will it get it is the question. See, that's what we don't know. But will he get, will they get more than 10 that he sold it for in 2021? My God. God says yes. And he first purchased it in 08 for 1.5. Oh, wow. Dave Ramsey, what a move you made there. 6x return in 15 years, roughly. Pretty good deal. So let's take a look at this beautiful house, because one of the beautiful things about working in real estate is this fun part of looking at these gorgeous homes. I don't know about you. I wouldn't mind living there. Would you? And I have to say, you know, as an entrepreneur, is owning a home like this in your life out of reach? I don't know. I don't believe that it is. Oh, I saw a comment up here. It says, okay, in 2023, Franklin Compound became the state's most expensive listing, hitting the market for $65 million. Wow, that must have been a very big property. Recently selling for $28 million in 2010. Last year in that area, we had over 12 homes that closed over $10 million. To put that in perspective, pre-COVID in 2019, I think we may have had one home that was over $10 million. So in the Nashville, Tennessee area, things are changing. So let's take a look at inventory during those years. In 2021, 6.212 million existing homes were sold in the U.S. That was the year Dave Ramsey sold this home originally in 2021 for $10 million. That was for sure a seller's market then. By 2022, we'd already gone down to 5.03. Well, it's not too many less homes than what we saw in this recessionary times, was it? And then in 2023, we'd gone down because that's when interest rates started to go up by 2%, double almost from the year before. But that was probably to slow the market, you see. But in 2023, we had 4.09 million. This was similar to what we saw in some of these great recession years, okay? Like in 2009 over here, see? We even sold more homes in 2009, if AI is correct. And then all the way up to 2024, 4 million. So we're still going down, Okay. And we felt it just as practitioners in 2024. And then this, you know, we've said already it's 4.7 months. So we'll see how the numbers pan out as we get closer. So in order to prepare for the future, we must first learn from the past, my dear friends. So August 14th has been the date for several significant historical events. Notably, it's the day Japan surrendered in World War II. It was announced in 1945, August 14th, marking the end of the war for many. That is a big deal. You see, World War II was obviously a really bad war, and the whole world was involved, and we never want another one. But you see, we must remember so we don't repeat. And there's real estate principles that we always pull from our past, no matter what it is, because you see, my friend's history repeats itself, not necessarily exactly the same way. Okay. But there's elements that always, always happen. And so if Japan was bombed, which it was, you see, because in August of 1945, the United States decided to use the most powerful weapon in the world had ever seen, atomic bombs. The first bomb was dropped on the Japanese city of Hiroshima, followed 3 days later by a second, the city of Nagasaki. This is Hiroshima. This is Nagasaki. The devastation was instant and enormous. Tens of thousands of people were killed immediately, and many more died later from injuries and radiation caused by the explosions. 6 days after the bomb in Nagasaki, Japan surrendered. They are still the only atomic weapons ever used in war, thank God. And their devastating power has meant countries have avoided using them to this day. U.S. President Harry S. Truman broke the news of Japan's surrender at a press conference at the White House at 7 p.m. on the 14th of August. Later at midnight, the U.K.'s recently elected Prime Minister Clement Attlee spoke to the British public in a radio broadcast. "Japan has surrendered today," he said. "The last of our enemy is laid low. Peace has once again come to the world." The following day, August 15th, 1945, Japan's Emperor Hirohito was heard on the radio for the first time ever when he announced the surrender. So that sounds devastating, and it absolutely, positively is. But the question I have, like so many, is what happened after? Let's take a look at this link. It's London. Thank you, London Ministry of Defense, for your very, very thoughtful and creative way to show London then and now. But you see, Hiroshima was a disaster, obviously, very devastating. But look at it, you can see Japan rebuilt something magical. How could they go from the worst tragedy of the modern world, a technology that was used on them isn't even, it's basically banned. I mean, it is and it isn't. It's so locked up because of the damage that the atomic bomb does. But yet Japan built this, a phoenix from the ashes, is what the Japanese story is. And it is phenomenal. Let's take a quick look to learn how they did it, because their rapid post-World War II reconstruction and economic growth, called the Japanese Economic Miracle, was a result of several factors, including strategic U.S. aid and investment, internal economic reforms, and a strong national focus on hard work and innovation. So look at that. Let's check it out. How Japan rebuilt itself crazy fast after World War II.
Daniel here. Today we're diving into one of the greatest comebacks in history. How Japan went from the rubble of World War II to being a tech and economic giant in just a few decades. It's like they found the world's biggest cheat code. Stick around for some wild facts. So, the year is 1945, and Japan's looking, well, Let's just say not exactly Instagram worthy. The cities were destroyed, the economy was in tatters, and let's face it, things weren't looking great. It's like waking up after a big party and realizing your house is a mess. Except, you know, way worse. You don't just need a broom, you need a whole new house. Now, after the war, the US steps in with the Marshall Plan and a bunch of other policies to help Japan rebuild. Fun fact, they weren't just helping out of kindness. This was during the Cold War, so it was like a game of Monopoly, but with countries. The US was playing Monopoly, global addition, and needed Japan on their side. The quicker Japan got back on its feet, the less likely they'd fall under Soviet influence. Call it strategic friendship. It's like loaning your neighbor money to fix their lawn so they don't let the other guy across the street take over their house. We're not besties, but hey, keep those weeds off my side. Then Japan's government went full on efficiency mode. They introduced land reforms, empowering farmers and making sure everyone could be more productive. Then they turbocharged their industrial sectors. Factories were up and running faster than you can say arigato. The country embraced something called kiretsu, huge networks of companies working together. Imagine if all your favorite fast food chains teamed up to deliver a super burger, except here. Instead of burgers, they're making cars, electronics, and, of course, more anime than you can binge watch in a lifetime. Japan was busy building, while the rest of the world was still scratching their heads over how to set the clock on their VCRs. Japan knew education was key, so they invested in schools like crazy. And with that came a wave of engineers, inventors, and business leaders ready to change the world. By the 1960s, they were cranking out electronics, cameras, and cars like there was no tomorrow. You know all those gadgets you can't live without today? Yeah? You can thank Japan for speeding that whole process up. Let's be real, Japan went from just surviving to here's a TV, Walkman, and a brand new Toyota faster than I can finish a Netflix series. Now, here is where things really got interesting in the 1964 Tokyo Olympics. Japan was like, world, look at us now. It was a huge moment, showing they were back on the world stage. They even launched the Shinkansen, the bullet train, right before the Olympics. And that thing was fast. Imagine a train so fast that it makes your morning commute feel like you've unlocked warp speed in real life. That was 50 years ago. Just imagine. The world had not seen anything like this. It's like Japan went from, oops, we're running behind, to guess what? We've already crossed the finish line twice. Another secret to Japan's success, the country's insane work ethic. They took the idea of hard work and just, well, ran with it. Ever heard of karoshi? That's literally death by overwork. No joke. It's a thing. But on the flip side, this dedication meant massive productivity and innovations left and right. In Japan, they worked so hard that taking a break might just mean switching hands while typing. By the 1980s, Japan was a global powerhouse. The tech, cars, and innovations kept coming. The world was kind of like, wow, we weren't even paying attention, and now you're winning? Japan showed that even after total devastation, with the right mix of strategy, education, and a dash of workaholism, you can become a top player again. So, how did Japan rebuild so fast? A little bit of help from the US, a lot of smarts, and an insane level of determination. They bounce back faster than any of us can bounce out of bed in the morning. Moral of the story, never count Japan out. And hey, next time you're stuck in traffic or frustrated with tech, just remember, Japan's over here creating bullet trains and next level robots. Meanwhile, I'm still trying to figure out how to fold my fitted sheets. Thanks for watching. If you enjoy...
Pretty impressive. Thank you, Japanophile Journeys. Let's definitely give that a like. And you know what? I think I'm going to give it a subscribe because... Fun fact about me, Japan is my favorite country for many reasons. I love the people. I love the culture. I love the land. I love them. And I love that they did this. They are a special, special nation. And now we can't close out the show without talking about then and now real estate. So our first video about VE Day came from London, showing what it looked like then and what it looked like now with pictures in the streets. Our second was from Hiroshima. So let's look at both of those cities, which, fun fact, I lived in London as well after university. And I'm just curious, what were prices after the war in London in 1945 when it probably didn't feel like a very good time to buy? According to the Northern Berlin Gazette, the average house price in the UK in 1945 was £620, which is probably $800-ish today, $850. In May of 2025, the average house price across London was £566. Okay, £566, seven-ish, 100,000 a day-ish. So let's look at some of these flats, as they call them in London. Let's start with a 1.1 million, about twice the price of, according to AI anyway. And that's what this one looks like right here. It's really a cute little property. Uh-oh. Making sure I'm a human. Okay, so two-bedroom flat for sale. This looks like an older flat, doesn't it? I wonder if it was around in 1945. I couldn't find the year of construction on this particular flat. But this is a 1.1 million, two bedrooms in London, England, for a little over $1 million. Let's see what a little more reasonable price is. This one's £475,000, so maybe $550-ish US, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. This one's a little more bare. This is a one-bedroom flat, basically an apartment, a condo, because you own it, but wow, it's a nice view. Looks like they modernized it, but it's very small. They're showing you the area is good. Oh, by the way, looks like, look at this, 10-year leasehold is 990 years, so I guess that's how you own things there. And then this one is a one-bed flat for sale, 525 square feet. Let's take a look. This one looks new. Indoor pool, hardwoods. Looks like maybe it comes with a bed. Maybe this is the model, I don't know. But if you bought a 1945, let's just say, you would be in the money today. That's 11-12x property values back in the day. Now in Japan, the average price of a home in Japan typically ranges from 30 to 50 million yen, which is 273,000 to 455 US. Let's take a look at eFestio to see homes of today in Hiroshima. This is an apartment in Hiroshima for 884,000 euros. Let's take a look. Again, this is, they call it an apartment, but I guess you own it, so it's kind of like a condo. That's what that looks like. Can you see the nuances of Japanese real estate versus where you live in this beautiful, big world? Okay, let's take a look at the next one. This is $198,000 for a town home. Look at that traditional Japanese architecture with the bamboo rugs, the sliding door. Does this take you back to the hit movie Karate Kid? The bonsai trees. And this one is quite nice. It's a townhome as well. 461,000 euros. Got a beautiful Japanese garden. Look how clean and neat and orderly. Perfectly placed everything is. The car is covered, the bike is staged, everything is laid out well, I would say. So my friends, if the Japanese can build their city after the atrocity of the bombing, do you think you can build a rental property portfolio? There's no right or wrong answer. There's no only one pathway. This is your life, your one wild and precious life. And remember, the key to getting ahead is getting started. So whatever that is, pick your pathway and get on with it, my dear friend. Thank you for listening.